After he read The Catcher in the Rye, Jim Sadwith decided to make it into a play and to go find the author, J.D. Salinger. Now, this was in the late 60s. Jim was still in boarding school. There was no internet. There were no search engines. And Salinger kept his whereabouts pretty quiet. Jim was able to learn about an area in New Hampshire where Salinger was thought to be living, and off he went. At the time, he used a reel-to-reel tape recorder to describe his asking for directions from the local townspeople.
She smiled. She said, "You're not the first one. By no means. They come and they go. And you won't find him. Nobody does. Nobody finds him. Nobody talks to him. Nobody gets near him. He won't see anyone." I said, "I'm determined. I said, I'm different. I may not find him, but I'm going to give it a darn good try."
Jim says that he did meet J.D. Salinger and that he talked with him. Twice. While Salinger never did give Jim permission to dramatize The Catcher in the Rye, the act of searching out and talking with the author ended up as a pivotal moment in the adolescence of the young Jim Sadwith. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story.
The Story is produced by North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. It's co-produced and distributed by American Public Media.
Ever since The Catcher in the Rye was first released 58 years ago, it has captivated readers. The author, J.D. Salinger, has this powerful insight into adolescence through his character Holden Caulfield. But Salinger has also been very protective of that. He has refused to approve any appropriation of the character. In fact, just last month, at the age of 90, Salinger won a court case to ban the U.S. publication of a new book that attempts to continue the story. When Jim Sadwith was about the same age as Holden Caulfield, he felt like he was living the real-life version of that character's unhappiness. Jim went to a New England prep school in the 1960s.
You know, I tried out for varsity soccer and then was bounced down to JV and then was bounced down to thirds. And so athletics wasn't going to be my strong suit. And that's one of the reasons I became interested in dramatics and joined the Dramatic Society. I also was in the Film Society, and that sort of made me seem like a gadfly or pushy. When you have club activities, you have to get up and make an announcement during a meal. And so when you get up too often and make too many announcements, people really don't want to hear from you anymore.
It was during his sophomore year at Hotchkiss when Jim Sadwith read The Catcher in the Rye. At first he thought it was just another English assignment, but then he was completely drawn in by the character of Holden Caulfield.
Like me, he didn't quite fit in. He talked about different classmates of his, like Ackley and Stradlatter, and these were people in my school.
You recognized them from your own classroom.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there was definitely Ackley in my class. Encounters where he talks about Ackley coming into his room and just sort of being kind of obnoxious, and nobody wants to hang around with him, but Holden feels kind of sorry for him, so he kind of hangs around with him, but the guy irritates him anyway. And Stradlatter, the jock, it was as if he had eavesdropped on my encounters at school and had just lifted those and put them in his book.
And so did you think that you were just like Holden Caulfield at the time?
Yes, I thought I was. And since I was interested in dramatics, I thought, gee, I could turn this into a play. And I thought that there was nobody better in the world to be Holden Caulfield. So I was probably thinking that if I did a good enough job, we could parlay this into a movie or a Broadway play, and
this
I
was
going to
be your
Caulfield
breakout moment, right?
This was it, because I was made to play that role, because I basically understood everything that Holden was going through. I was breathing his experience, his life.
Over the next year and a half, Jim Sadwith worked on a dramatic adaptation of The Catcher in the Rye. Jim was clear in his mind that the play was not to be an interpretation. Jim just wanted Salinger's story to be on stage.
In fact, at the beginning of the script, I wrote this page to the director saying something to the effect of, this script is not to be an interpretation of The Catcher in the Rye. It's to be a door through which the story flows freely. I had a narrator off stage who would narrate the thoughts. And then I had taken some photographs, some slides, which we projected. Sometimes it was on the scrim at the back of the stage, and there were also two screens at the side of the stage. And I went out and took those photographs and tried to figure out what the best images were, like a baseball mitt, which was Allie's baseball mitt, or a shattered piece of car window, which was the window that Austin put his fist into. things like that.
You'd put a lot of time into this. This wasn't just a sort of Saturday afternoon redrafting of the book.
No, this was a high school kid's, life's work. But I remember somebody asking me, do you have Salinger's permission? And I think it caught me up completely short, and I thought, well, no, I don't.
Do I need it?
And so, well, there's the rub. Do you really need it just for high school? But somehow that infected me with this idea that I needed to find Salinger to get his permission. Maybe it was his blessing. I felt obligated morally to tell him what I was doing. You know, as I think about it over the years, maybe I was also hoping that this would be my big break.
So Jim Sadwith decided to find J.D. Salinger. No easy task. Salinger was already known to be very shy of publicity. Some called him a recluse. So Jim got to work.
I wrote to Salinger's agents, the Harold Ober Agency. I went to New York City and sat in their office until someone would talk to me.
Seriously?
Yep. And they did talk to me, and they said, he doesn't see anybody. He wouldn't be interested. He doesn't want to be bothered.
Go away, young man.
Yeah. And then this girl who had been in school plays with me, her father told me that there was an article in Newsweek that talked about J.D. Salinger and mentioned a town where either he lived or might have lived. So when I went to New York, I got that archive issue out of in the New York City Public Library, and it mentioned the town. And so I'd be surprised if I didn't write him at the time, just to that town, because I wrote to everybody else.
Right, care of the postmaster or whatever.
Yeah, and clearly I didn't hear anything back. And so then one day decided, you know what, I'm just going to go up to that town and find him. The friend of mine from New Jersey drove up in his orange VW Bug and met me, and we hightailed it out of Hotchkiss and headed up Route 91 got onto Route 91 and headed up into New Hampshire.
So you get to this town eventually.
Mm-hmm.
What's your first move?
Well, first move is we drove through the town because it was so small we didn't realize we had gone through it. So we turned around, and the main building in the town was the post office grocery store, and went inside, and I didn't really quite know what J.D. Salinger looked like, and I was afraid that maybe he was incognito, as I said at the time. In fact, incognito, I think, was a term that Holden used to use, and I had already started using a lot of Holdenisms. But anyway, I was afraid maybe he was incognito. Maybe he was the postmaster now or the greengrocer. And so you never know. So I was determined to be completely respectful. And I also felt that using the term J.D. was really too familiar and disrespectful. So I went to the deli counter, which is the first person I saw, and I said, could you please tell me where Jerome David Salinger lives? And the guy said, never heard of him. So I was, I was devastated. I thought, well, if anybody heard of him, it was going to be people in the store.
Right.
And then I started to think, well, but maybe they're protecting him. I turned to a woman next to me. I said, do you happen to know where Jerome David Salinger lives? And she said, never heard of him. And then these children started chanting at the front of the store, Salinger lives on Dingham Hill, Salinger lives on Dingham Hill. And so I look at the woman who kind of avoids my glance. So I went over to him and I asked him where Salinger lives. And they were all, they were like 6, 7, 8 years old, and they pointed in different directions.
He went that way.
Exactly. So I look at the woman and she says, I'm sorry, but a lot of people come up here trying to find him. And, we just feel like maybe we ought to, not encourage it. You look like a nice kid. I don't think I'll talk to you, but here's how you get to his place.
Jim Sadwith, as a teenager in the late 60s, wrote an adaptation of The Catcher in the Rye, and he was determined to find J.D. Salinger to get his permission to perform it. You're listening to The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. Now, the directions that the woman gave to Jim were incredibly vague, but he followed them as best he could. When he still couldn't find Salinger's place, he began asking everyone he saw. This became so important in the search for Salinger that when Jim went back to his prep school, he got out a tape recorder and described the conversations he'd had with the people he met along the way. He still has that tape.
Do you know where Jerome David Salinger lives? Can you please tell me where Jerome David Salinger
lives?
Ask him if he knew where Jerome David Salinger lives.
Can you please tell me where Jerome David Salinger lives?
So he's getting a little bit discouraged. went on further and saw this driveway leading up this hill. Very, you know, crunchy stones. And there was this house up there. And it had this sun deck all around the second story. It was out in the middle of this field. So I said to Charlie, I said, that looks Salinger-ish.
There was stones on the driveway, so it made a racket. We got about halfway up. I remember it was a pretty steep incline. And I got out to knock on the door, and this dog comes barking out at me. Now, there have been rumors that Salinger's had dogs. And so I had worried about Dobermans or German Shepherds and gates that I'd have to climb over and things like that. But this dog turned out to be one of those miniature dachshunds and was yapping at my feet.
Right.
And out on the deck on the second story, this man comes out, and instinctively I knew it was J.D. Salinger.
How far away from him were you at that moment?
Well, I was on the driveway level. He's up a story, and I would say, you know, maybe I was about 50 yards from the house, quite a distance.
So you're looking more at a silhouette than you are at a person's face, right?
I could see his face because he was probably front-lit, but you just knew, you know, and maybe I'd seen a picture of him when he was young, but there was no question. He looked like Stuart Granger, who I'd seen in King Solomon's Mines. He was graying, a long face. It looked a little haggard, although I probably couldn't tell that from that distance. He was wearing a maroon sweater, and I didn't know what to say to him. I was like caught like a deer in the headlights. So trying to figure out, you know, how to even begin this, I asked him if he knew where Jerome David Salinger lives.
Can you tell me where Jerome David Salinger lives? And he said, I am he. What do you want?
I'll talk more with Jim Sadwith about his encounter with J.D. Salinger and what happened when Jim got back to school in just a moment. I'm Dick Gordon from American Public Media. This is The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story. Jim Sadwith was not the first high school student to be captivated by the character of Holden Caulfield. The Catcher in the Rye is spoken now for untold numbers of adolescents. At one point in the book, Holden is arguing with a girl. She's crying, and he says, the whole thing was sort of funny in a way, if you thought about it, and all of a sudden I did something I shouldn't have. I laughed. And I have one of these very loud, stupid laughs. I mean, if I ever sat behind myself in a movie or something, I'd probably lean over and tell myself to please shut up. Jim Sadwith was a boarding school student when he first read the book. He wrote a dramatic version of it and set out to find the author J.D. Salinger to get permission to put on the play. And he found him. As Jim recalls the day when he met Salinger, he says he was wearing his usual clothes for that time.
I'm pretty sure it was my green and white kind of flannel shirt. I was wearing bell bottoms that a girlfriend had made for me, where she had taken blue jeans and slit the seam on the side and sewed in a piece of color fabric. Oh, dingo boots, which were like these sort of faux cowboy boots at the time.
Jim says he eventually found Salinger at his home in New Hampshire. Here's Jim in a tape that he made to remember that experience 40 years ago.
I melted. I absolutely melted. I let out a sigh and I said, Mr. Salinger, I've been looking for you for almost a year and a half now. He said, yes, what do you want? Why didn't you write? And at this point, he's still up on that second story at the sun porch looking down at me. Why didn't you write? I said, Harold Ober told me not to. And he said, who? Harold Ober. Harold Ober's been dead for 10 years. And I said, the Harold Ober Agency. He said, yes, you're right. Well, what do you want?
And he's up on the deck, and at this point, the dog is yapping away.
I mean, you're almost shouting at each other to be heard then, am I right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And that's when I decided I was going to stop talking and see if he would come down. Now, you know, that makes it sound very calculating. All I did was stop talking because we were shouting at each other, and I could never convey what I wanted to convey to him shouting at that distance. So I stopped talking, and he came down. Came onto the driveway. I remember I shook his hand, which he didn't seem anxious to do. And I told him that I was at boarding school and it wasn't a very good time for me. And I had read The Catcher in the Rye and been so taken with it. And I had turned it into a play. And I think he said, to where are you from? I said, New Jersey, but boarding school's in Connecticut. And he's just keep nodding. And he said, I knew what you wanted the minute you drove up here. He said, do you realize how often this happens? He said, this happens once every few weeks, and it pains me, it saddens me to have to say no to you.
You've told him that you've written it. You're not asking him permission to write it, right?
Right. No, I told him that I've written it. Yeah. I was just asking his permission to put it on at our school.
And what did he say?
It can't be done successfully. You can't interpret The Catcher in the Rye. And then I stopped and I said, well, wait, Mr. Salinger, I wrote on the first page of the script a note to the director that the script must be a door through which the story flows freely, not to be interpreted. And he said, no, that's impossible. Anytime you put a boy on the stage with a red hat, that's interpretation. Anytime you put a Phoebe on the stage in pajamas, that's interpretation. And I nodded, I agreed. I said, but I still think that this script is the right formula. It's not too much interpretation. I don't remember exactly what I said. But I said that I thought it could be done successfully.
You're challenging him. You're not cowed by him entirely, are you?
Yeah, we really had, you know, I think about this. We really had a back and forth dialogue. He said, you can throw away my advice, but I ask you not to do this script. Respect my wishes. If you do this, you're stealing. You're taking something that doesn't belong to you. These are my children. And I said to him, well, Mr. Salinger, don't you believe in the Bible? And it turns out it wasn't the Bible. I believe it was the Prophet by Khalil Gibran.
Yeah.
Where I said, don't you believe in the Bible where it's the job of the parents to raise the children to maturity and then let them go into the world? And don't you believe that The Catcher in the Rye has now grown up and it's public domain? I don't know why I said public domain, but don't you believe it should be let go in the world? And he said, no. These children are definitely the same young age. They never grow old. It was almost as if he had them like in a glass case.
Uh-huh.
You know, when he said this, please respect my wishes. He looked at my pants and my get up and he said, you look like a creative young man. Why don't you do something of your own? Do something of your own. I said, you know, this makes me depressed. I've worked on this for a year and a half. He said, it shouldn't have taken that long. Should have taken you a few weeks at the most.
Now he's a professor.
Yeah. So we sort of started to part ways, and he started to turn away. And I said, Mr. Salinger, can we keep in contact? And he said, no. There's nothing to keep in contact about. And he walked away, and that was it.
You're listening to The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. As Jim Sadwith and his friend Charlie drove back to school, Jim was thinking that he would do what Salinger had asked, that he'd burn his adaptation of The Catcher in the Rye that he'd written. But he also realized something really big had just happened.
I told Charlie to pull over to the side of the road, and I started writing down absolutely everything that I could remember. I also remember thinking about, in The Catcher in the Rye, Holden Caulfield, you know, the first things that he said when he was thinking about running away with Sally Hayes was that he's going to run away and live in the woods where nobody could find him, but out in a field where it'd be sunny as hell all the time. And that's exactly how Salinger lived. So we drove back to school. Charlie dropped me off. I ran upstairs to my room, got out this reel-to-reel tape recorder that I had. And just because I didn't want to forget anything.
But I defied all those people who told me, you can't find Salinger. I made my goal. My goal was to find Salinger.
I recorded onto the tape every person we had met. I guess I considered myself an actor at the time and that I was going to be an actor professionally. And so when I listened to this tape, I hear myself reenacting all those voices. And
well,
so I recorded all this.
You must have been just so excited about the whole thing, though.
I was very excited. And then I played it for the teacher down at the end of the hallway, who was our quartermaster, and he, like, was all excited. And he told the English teachers, and it turned out I was play in this for all the different classes at school. All the teachers wanted me to come in and play this tape and talk about my quest to find Salinger and the experience.
Now, were the teachers impressed or were the students impressed as well?
Everybody was impressed. My stock went up quite a bit.
Holden Caulfield no longer.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. It actually, by doing this, it kind of made me less Holden-esque because I was less alienated. But it was pretty cool. But then, of course, I had to decide whether we were going to put this thing on or not.
All the adults around him thought it was simple. The headmaster, his friend's parents, his parents said Jim Sadwith should do the play, even though he was still conflicted.
I'm a failed character, a flawed character, because when the adults start saying, you know, you don't owe him anything and it's just an English project, it was kind of what I wanted to hear, and yet it felt like adults selling out. And here I was. It saddened me. And then it saddened me to kind of realize
that you were going to put it on.
In that direction. I was going to put it on, but also excited me.
So how was the production?
Well, I was still nervous about the reception. I was still not the most popular kid on the block. And so I was really terrified, actually. And one of the things is we talked about not publicizing it, so there were no printed programs. So what we did was we projected credits onto those side screens and on the scrim so there would be no written record of this performance. And so I'm backstage waiting to go, you know, to start, and it says The Catcher in the Rye, written by J.D. Salinger, adapted by Jim Sadwith. Jim Sadwith is Holden Caulfield. I forget how we did the credits. And then a little bit later, it had written by Jim Sadwith, and you hear people groaning. And kind of all the air went out of my balloon. I said, this is going to be my worst nightmare. But we put on the play. You could feel the audience was with you, and by the end, they just basically all rose to their feet, clapping, cheering. I just recall it being way beyond my expectations, and people were in tears, and from all objective viewpoints, it was a huge hit. So I thought, well, Salinger was wrong. I mean, he asked me not to do it because it belonged to him, but he also said because it can't be done successfully. You can't interpret the play. But here I had done it successfully. People who had derided me or people who didn't particularly care for me, you know, were wildly cheering. This was the proof. I had the key to The Catcher in the Rye. And so I decided I was going to go back to Salinger. I was going to take my name off the script, and I was going to go back and hand him the script as a gift.
Well, and a little bit of an I told you so, too, I guess, right?
No, well, maybe, but I don't think it was I told you so with any sort of attitude. I think
no malice, but just a sort of, yay, I did it.
Maybe, and also thinking, oh, well, here's the script without my name on it, but if he read it and really liked it, you know, he'd want to get in touch with me, clearly. And maybe, you know, who knows, maybe that other part of the equation would come to be, that it would be a play that I'd get, you know, a Broadway play or a movie, and I'd get to be Holden Caulfield. So that winter, I borrowed somebody's car. I drove back up to New Hampshire. I found his house. Now there was several feet of snow on the ground. I parked down on the street because I couldn't even get up his driveway. Tromped through the snow. I think it was about knee deep. Knocked on his back door because that was the only door I could get access to. And the door opens up. And I hear, yes. And then the cat runs out. And he says, oh, now look what you've done. And I started to head for the cat. I said, no, never mind, never mind. He said, what is it? I thought, this is a terrible way to begin.
Now, did Salinger recognize you, or did you know yet?
No, he didn't recognize me at that point. And I said, Mr. Salinger, please don't be angry, but I did your play. And his eyes widen and his mouth drops. He says, you're the boy who was here this fall. And I said, yeah. And he said, well, come in. So he took me into the house, and he takes me into the kitchen, and he said, how'd it go? So I said, oh, Mr. Salinger, it was amazing. It was incredible. People stood up, and they cheered, and he said, yes, and they cried, and it was a big success, right? I said, right. He said, well, you're not the first to have done it. there's a group on the Hudson did it, and this group did it, and that group did it, and it's always the same thing. It's always people stand up and cheer and cry, but I don't care. I don't like the theater, and this is my way of thumbing my nose at them. They're never going to get The Catcher in the Rye. And I said, Mr. Salinger, I brought the script. I took my name off it. He said, I don't want to see it. I don't want to see it. It's in the car. I don't want to see it. I said, okay. I don't remember quite what else transpired except that he said to me at the end of the conversation, he said, so do you need a ride anywhere? I'm taking my son to the bus station. If I had thought about it, I would have said, yeah, I could use a ride to the bus station. That would have given me an extra half hour in the car with Salinger and his son. But no, I said, Mr. Salinger, no, thank you, but my car's down, parked down on the road. We shook hands. It was a whole different experience. He was much more cordial, which was kind of strange since I had gone against his wishes. But maybe he admired the pluck,
yeah,
and the perseverance.
Jim Sadwith didn't leave that script for Salinger. He says it seemed like the author was determined not to even lay eyes on it. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. The tape that Jim made turned out to be very useful to him. When he applied to colleges and the admission people asked for an essay about himself, he sent them a copy of the tape that he'd made describing his search for J.D. Salinger. Jim says he was accepted at Harvard, and he remembers sitting in the admissions office.
And while I was there, the dean of admissions happened to be walking by the door, and he said, Dean Peterson, come here. I want you to meet Jim Sadwith. And Dean Peterson said, Sadwith, you're the kid who sent us that tape about Salinger.
Salinger lives up on Dingham Hill in the woods back in the mountain.
And I said, yes. And he said, what a pain in the ass that was. We had to find this tape recorder. We all had to make sure we're sitting down together. We had to listen to this thing. And it worked.
It so got you in.
It got me in. Yeah. That's pretty much what he said.
Jim Sadwith became a writer and a director for TV and film. He says he knows that his Salinger experience changed things for him.
To have so many people say, no, you can't do it. You can't find him or he won't talk to you. And then to have gone up and actually found him and talked to him and had a decent conversation with him twice.
Yeah.
It really gave this foundation of confidence that I could do anything. And I think that's one of the things that gave me the confidence to feel like I could make it and to do just about anything I set my mind to. That was seminal for that. He also said, do something of your own. That always resonated with me, and it felt like a challenge. And so when I went out to Los Angeles and had my first TV movie produced, I wrote and thanked him. And for several years thereafter, I wrote and thanked him for telling me to do something of my own. And, without saying so, I thanked him for that experience. I never heard back.
I bet you didn't get a letter back. So tell me something, Jim. Just a few days ago, this matter came to national attention about, I think he's a British author who'd done a Holden Caulfield Grows Up book and
yes.
had hoped to have it published in the United States. Salinger intervened, and the book will not be published. I mean, in a kind of a funny way, it's the same story. This is someone who wanted to work with Salinger's character, only in this case, Salinger just took him to court and said, no, you're not going to do it.
Of course, the difference being that this was to exploit his property for gain. Ours was just a school performance, not to sound defensive, but, I suppose, had he known, my fantasy was that when we put this play on at school, Salinger was actually going to be there in the back of the audience and was going to stand up, and clap, reveal himself. But that was not to be.
After 20 years in the film business in L.A., Jim Sadwith decided to move his family back east. They looked for the perfect place to live and wound up in New England.
It was taking my daughter to a hockey game. And it all looked very familiar to me, and suddenly I realized I was near Salinger's house. And that I had, after all those years, moved back to the East Coast and moved about a half hour away from J.D. Salinger.
35, 40 years after the fact, right?
Yeah. So maybe I dropped her off for practice or something, and then I went and tried to see if I could find his house again. And I got to tell you, my heart was beating more rapidly than I think it did the other two times. Nervous that he would catch me. and that it would feel like I was stalking him.
Did you find the driveway?
I did.
And what happened?
I left really quickly because I was afraid he might just be walking by or something and he wouldn't recognize me. I just didn't want to bother him. As a high school kid, you know, maybe I had an excuse.
Well, you were Holden at that time, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I talked with Jim Sadwith from a studio in Vermont. If you have your own story about an unusual encounter with an unusual character, something that changed you, I'd sure like to hear about it. Send me a note to our website at thestory.org or call and leave me a message at 1-888-966-9862 or just leave me a note on Facebook. I'm Dick Gordon from American Public Media. This is The Story.